Welcome to this podcast from Inforum, a division of the Commonwealth Club of California, by and for people in their 20s and 30s with a mission to inspire debate around civic issues. This podcast is made possible through support from the members of Inforum and the Commonwealth Club. To learn more about events or membership, visit us online at commonwealthclub.org/inforum or join us on Facebook, MySpace, and LinkedIn.
So good evening and welcome to tonight's meeting of Inforum, a division of the Commonwealth Club, by and for people in their 20s and 30s, with a mission to inspire debate on civic issues. You can find us online at commonwealthclub.org/inforum. I'm Linda Gross, Assistant Professor of Fashion Design at California College of the Arts. Tonight, for eco-fashion from Birkenstocks to couture, we brought together a panel of environmentalists who are helping to bring green practices into the fashion world. These speakers have all devoted their work to this new direction of fashion. But can eco-fashion be seen as a revolution to the industry, or are we just witnessing another fleeting trend? We'll get the lowdown on what's driving this movement forward and what we as consumers can do to help. Tonight we host Maggie Kim, co-founder and designer of Oda. Oda is inspired by Native American and Korean traditional costume and uses techniques such as tea staining fabric and hand-making buttons from found antlers and bamboo. Zem Joaquin, director of Global Green Board and founder and editor-in-chief of Ecofabulous, through her popular blog, Joaquin encourages sustainability and promotes green products in beauty, fashion, and the home. Jocelyn Van Arsdale, owner of EcoCitizen, a boutique whose clothing combines high quality, fair trade, and classic fashion design. EcoCitizen uses fair trade practices, sweatshop-free merchandise, and organic fashion products. Tierra Delfort, founder and designer at Delfort Denim. Forte's line combines style and sustainability by using 100% organic cotton. Delfort's premium denim apparel interprets luxury as a combination of distinctive design and ethical production. Karen Holtzman, director of category management at Transfair USA. Transfair USA developed the internationally recognized fair trade certified standard for coffee, tea, fruit, flowers, chocolate, and other products, and is seeking a certification standard for apparel to address the eco clothing claim. So please welcome our panel. Right, I have a series of questions for each of you. I'm going to ask our panelists to, I'm going to select a couple of them for each of the questions, but also invite them to chirp in if they've got a burning desire to do so. So my first question is directed at Zem and Jocelyn. And the question is, fashion is criticized as the antithesis of sustainability. Our own Paul Hawkins said, fashion is the deliberate inculcation of obsolescence. So does fashion have any redeeming features at all relative to the environmental movement?
Do you want to go?
I can start.
I think it definitely has redeeming features. I mean, I also don't think it that you necessarily have to have obsolescence in clothing. I mean, this is vintage. I wear vintage clothing all the time. And I actually love the expression of mixing it with new sustainable materials. So I think that, you know, I think fashion's important because it's a modern way to define or to communicate who you are and what you care about. And so that's why I think it's such an important way to actually show your peers what's important to you. So wearing, quite literally, on your sleeve, sustainable clothing, I think is an important way to be able to express that.
Yeah, I agree. I think basically people are always going to wear clothes. Fashion is a form of creative expression. And I think we've gotten to the point where the market is very saturated at the moment and people are trying to find another way to, you know, dress consciously and to also express their values through the way they dress. And I think, you know, eco-fashion is, you know, growing from that paradigm.
And I'd like to just chirp in a little bit. In as much as fashion reflects what's going on in society, certainly you know, environmental issues are really an important part of what's going on in our, you know, current culture. So, you know. Anyone else on the panel? No? Okay, this one's directed at Maggie and Tierra. So eco-fashion is primarily defined by material choices in the product so far, and yet this is only one small area of impact of fashion. Can you suggest some other areas of impact?
Well, actually the biggest area of impact happens after you bring the clothes home from the store. Something like 80%+ of environmental impact comes from consumer care, which is washing and drying your clothes. And that's actually a pretty simple one to improve greatly. Washing things in cold water, hanging to dry, and you reduce the environmental impact by over 50% just by doing that. And you save a little money on your electricity bill. And I think other areas of impact are disposal. So making companies take responsibility for what happens to their clothing after the person who originally bought it is done with it. Vintage is a great solution for that, reselling clothing. And take-back programs like Del Forte Denim's Project Regeneration, Patagonia's Common Threads program. All of these address issues outside of fiber and labor.
It's complicated.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think beyond material, the material aspect of eco-fashion, you definitely need to take into consideration social responsibility. I think that it's really important to buy textiles that are fair trade, so the labor practices are fair and the economies of those countries are thriving, and I think that's an important thing to consider. Also, beyond materials, I think processes of production processes around making textiles and the clothes themselves are important. You can be using organic cotton, but then use a really toxic dye on it. So I think it's important to take into consideration not just the materials, but all the processes. So from dyeing and everything like that.
Would anyone else like to chirp in? Karen, perhaps?
I think you also have to value the economics of the supply chain so that it's not just that you're buying fiber, it's that you're paying a justified price for the fiber. And as you move through the different places along the supply chain, from the ginner to the spinner to the cut sew finish of that supply chain, that all of the costs are accounted for, whether it be for the price of the cotton or for some type of water treatment plant to deal with those dyes, and even the energy costs that are going into the factories, and making sure that your price is the final price of the product actually puts into account all of those externalities that happen in the cost of making the clothing.
That's a great segue into our next question, which is directed at Karen and Jocelyn. Fast fashion and increasing speed to market of products has had a catastrophic effect on workers, and so has the falling prices for clothing. What would be one thing that either you could do or designers in general could do to ease or change that pressure on workers?
I think the first way to start is to ask a lot of questions and to really make a stand of, you know, protecting workers' rights and to make sure that they can actually live above the minimum wage. There's a company I'm dealing with right now in China who they make their product in China, and according to China Labor Watch, basically they provide their workers with benefits, but it really does not provide them with enough money to escape their current condition. So I think the one thing to really do to combat fast fashion is to really, I think eco-fashion is an inherently slow fashion because there's a lot of small producers. It isn't fast fashion. It isn't mass production. But I think if you want to prescribe to eco-fashion, it's really important to ask and know where your clothes come from.
I'd actually say that there's one benefit to fast fashion, and that is the fact that in order to make it to market, you need to be close with your logistics. So fast fashion has helped maintain some of the production in Central America. So there's actually been a little bit of a positive spin, because if you look at the miles that your clothing is traveling, it's coming from Turkey, it's coming from India, it's coming from China, and you're seeing very little that actually comes from Mexico or Guatemala or the Dominican Republic. But a lot of those are your short-term turnaround orders. But in general, it's not even so much the fast fashion. Well, actually, it probably is the fast fashion that the detailing or the finish on your particular clothing is so customized that there's an immediate switching cost. So if that factory in Indonesia can't do that finish, you're going to move the production order to the Philippines. Mm-hmm. And all the sundries that go into that product are all coming from different parts of the world. So there's no punishment for switching costs. So one day your product is made in Bangladesh, the next day it's made in China. And so it doesn't allow any job security or security to the factory to know that they're in business tomorrow.
Just want to go back a little bit to the fast fashion versus slow fashion. And I can see ways that slow fashion could really epitomize what we're trying to get at with sustainability. Are there any ways that fast fashion could be more sustainable? Are there some design strategies or ideas where fast fashion might be okay?
I mean, I think absolutely. If you look at big retailers like Topshop or H&M, which are their specialty is fast fashion, if they would commit to using 5% organic cotton in all of their products, whatever they make, the fiber is going to be the same. Whatever they make out of cotton, the fiber is going to be the same. And they do enormous quantities. That would have a huge impact on the global market for organic cotton, which then does impact workers, farmers, everyone along that supply chain. So at least while they're doing this thing that puts some pressure on the supply chain, at least they're incorporating a positive aspect into that. And I think people are moving in that direction very, very slowly.
I think also fast fashion doesn't necessarily need to be cheap fashion. And so if they actually put the right price tag on that, it doesn't have to be as painful.
I think one of the definitions, though, in the design world is fast-turn products do tend to be the low-price things that you see in Forever 21 and then find on markdown 3 weeks later.
I will use this as an example, though, because I wore this just to give you some visual representation of fast fashion that actually is fast fashion with a conscience. So Rogan, who designs for Barney's and has Loom State and a number of lines, now produces for Target. And it's very high quality. Actually, no one ever knows it's from Target. It's beautiful. I don't shop at Target normally. And I went there specifically to see what they had. And, you know, it had completely sold out. So it did quite well. And, you know, it's beautiful. And it's actually, you can tell it's made to last. I mean, it's very high quality. So I think, and it was
$30. What's the fabrication?
And I'd like to mention that it's 100% organic cotton and fair labor.
I think something else that fast fashion companies can do is develop recycling programs or buyback programs for people who don't want to wear the clothing anymore. I think that's something that they can do, recycle that fiber and reuse it for their next lines.
So you're talking there about providing a service besides just this volume of throughput going through the system, that there's a service element there that could still have a fast turnaround.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think Tiara should explain what your regeneration program is, because I think it's quite interesting.
So at Del Forte Denim, we have a program called Project Regeneration that allows customers to return their used Del Forte denim jeans to the company, where they're recycled into sort of one-of-a-kind, really special hand-worked items that can be resold.
Great. Okay, we touched a little bit there. We've mentioned cotton just a little bit in passing, so here's an opportunity to go in a little bit more depth. I'd like the panel to explore issues with cotton, which until recently has been the most popular fibre, and I think it can provide a lens through which we can explore sustainability issues and even scrutinise other fibres through that lens. And I'd like you to suggest other areas of impact besides toxicity in cotton, because we hear a lot about that and we hear about organic as a solution, but what other impacts does cotton have? What other approaches might we have to making it more sustainable?
Okay, well, I'll start there because cotton is absolutely my my area of expertise. And I think one of the biggest issues with cotton outside of the toxicity is the labor issues around it. And, one of the things that I was most proud of to see in the fashion industry was the fact that a bunch of the big companies, such as Levi's, Marks & Spencer, got together, actually, I think it was in 2002, and banned the use of cotton coming from Uzbekistan due to forced labor and child labor issues there. I think this is just a wonderful example of large companies using their purchasing power to try and affect positive change in the world. Mm-hmm. The cotton economy employs many, many people, unfortunately employs most of them at non-living wages. And again, looking at organic cotton, one of the outside issues besides toxicity there is it does require more labor, more human labor. So it can provide jobs as well. Of course, that makes it more expensive, which is a deterrent for manufacturers buying it. So it is a very, very complex issue. But I think looking at organic cotton as sort of the only solution to the problem is very short-sighted and setting us all up for failure.
Yeah, I just want to press a little bit more on this because if you look at the figures, they're kind of alarming. Organic cotton represents 2% of the global supply of cotton, and genetically modified cotton represents 28% globally. So, you know, that means we've got to find some tools that influence that other, you know, that other percentage there, a large percentage that still has to shift, and organic's only affecting 2% of it, you know. What about issues with water, for example, and so on? You know, other besides the toxicity, could you speak to that?
Well, we're not going to make it to organic cotton just yet. So in the interim, Better Cotton Initiative is one good example of companies coming together to bring farmers along the trajectory towards a more sustainable cotton and transitioning towards organic cotton. And yes, water use, soil degradation. And when we talk about toxicity, I think sometimes we have a very me-centric philosophy on toxicity, but if you think that your genes are toxic, think about the family that's actually applying the toxic chemicals. And when you look at cotton farms, especially in West Africa and in India, these cotton farms are in people's backyards. Their huts are next to the cotton farms. There is no kind of separation between your workspace and your living space. So we need to think about the children that actually go running through the cotton fields and the exposure that they have.
Well, it's not just children running through the fields. Actually, the majority of workers are children and women, and they don't have gloves. So they're picking cotton, which is quite prickly, and it's then puncturing their skin, and then the pesticides and herbicides are being absorbed directly into their bloodstream. And so that's another issue. The other issue is also the majority of cotton is bleached, not just so that you get those bright whites, but also so then it takes other dyes, and so a lot of people are using, you know, really toxic bleaches, and that creates dioxin, which then gets into our waterways, and it changes the pH level of the ocean as well, or all of the waterways, and then it's very complicated, but it continually affects the ecosystem.
So we're getting a sense of how complex things are, and how a single tool. It's almost naive in a way, really, to expect that a single tool is going to address the complexities that we have with sustainability. It's just naturally complex and in a way sort of unpredictable. and that we need as many tools as we possibly can to tackle the issues.
I just want to comment on the price of cotton, because you have U.S. cotton subsidies which have distorted the market price, as well as a lot of intermediation along the supply chain. So we often don't think about the 10 million families in West Africa and Benin and Mali and other places that are dependent on cotton for their livelihoods, but we really need to look at how the cotton trade works, because it's a commodity, so it's subject to speculation, it's subject to profiteers, and that's not actually valuing the cost of sustainable production for the cotton grower themselves.
Thank you for bringing that point up. I have a little fact I'd like to bring up too, because you're right, there's the cotton commodity price really makes things intolerable in developing nations. And if you look at our own US cotton situation, the cotton farms, the size of the cotton farms has doubled over the last few years, 15 years or so, and yet the number of them has halved. So, something's going on where smaller farmers are finding it more difficult to stay on the land. And I wonder who really benefits from a low price of cotton. Is it really the farmer? If we're honest, who really benefits?
My understanding,
yeah.
And I don't claim to be an expert in this area, but it is large agribusiness that's benefiting from the cotton subsidies. It's not small family farmers. And it's certainly not the people who are putting all the extra effort and finance behind switching to organic.
Any other comments?
I just wanted to mention that, we just celebrated Slow Food Nation here in San Francisco, and people became really conscious of, and not to say they became, a lot of people were, but it was highlighted that, to know where your food comes from, who grows it, to have a connection to your food, but why not extend that to have a connection to your clothing? Just because you're wearing it and not ingesting it, it represents so many different things in your life, and it affects so many different people, that it's really important that you are cognizant of where it comes from and where it's going.
So you're talking here about having relationships that our modern way of delivering, whether it's food or garments, is really...
Well, I mean...
There aren't relationships anymore.
Not even just that. Also, your furniture, everything. Just becoming more eco-wise. Being aware of your purchases and across the board.
How people are affected and so on.
Yeah.
This is for anybody on the panel. And Jocelyn, you need to chirp in a little bit more. Is there room for ego systems in sustainable fashion? Not eco, but ego. What's the role of humility in practice, basically?
Well, we talked briefly about this 15 minutes ago or so, but basically I think there is a need for an ego in this, because what you're up against is ego-based and inherently has an ego, which is the traditional fashionista, show, and that whole show that goes on with what is already existing. So I think in order to be competitive with that sort of... mentality, there does have to be an ego, and I'm not saying in a bad way, I'm just saying, there has to be a lot of, I put that down to good design, and really respecting intelligent design and demanding intelligent design, because I don't think we need any more bad design out there, and because eco fashion does have a bad rap because of that. And I think if people are thinking about doing a fashion line, I think it's important that they have a design degree or have studied some sort of fashion design, because it is architecture for the body, and it is a subject of study that people take very seriously. And with that in consideration of the waste that is already out there, we do need to be intelligent about it.
Not to be confused with the other type of intelligent design.
Maggie, I wonder if you could speak to it too, because your line is this very distinct look.
I think that, Oda's aesthetic is just as important to us as being eco-conscious. So for our aesthetic is definitely not, you know, blending into the crowd or anything like that. We definitely have a very different look. So I think there definitely is room in for ego and eco fashion. I think you can still look great, you can still stand out from a crowd, and still be eco-conscious. I think that, you know, one of the things that we really value in our production and just our company as a whole is providing quality in our clothing and being able to provide eco fashion to people who want to look good.
Is there a role, is there a changing role for the designer besides, you know, an expression and you know, through garments, specifically with sustainability in mind? Tierra, do you find that you have an additional role besides being the designer? Or?
Absolutely. I'm, you know, I've been a designer for 10 years, and I've never been on a panel before I had Del Forte. I don't think anyone cared that much about, you know, what I thought about fashion before I made a very strong statement that I wanted my personal values to match what I was putting out there in terms of the styles I was designing. And I think, you know, my job really, I think first and foremost, it's to be honest about what I'm doing with my product. I don't claim that Del Forte denim is some perfectly eco-friendly product. You know, I do something that's very impactful. I only use organic cotton, and that's a commitment I made. So that's something I've never been asked to do before as a designer, is make a certain social environmental commitment that I did. And I think the other thing that I do is I ask for help and input from all sorts of different places, like the Sustainable Cotton Project, just to stay informed about how what I'm doing impacts the world in a bigger way. And again, this is something that I've never done before, Del Forte.
So communicating something and educating something. Mm-hmm.
Educating
about
myself.
Something beyond the product. Karen, this next question is for you. Bob Adams of IDEO, San Francisco design firm, recently said that businesses need more stuff because that's the model that they're working with. Now, we're all working within established systems, and we've touched on them a little bit. If you could change anything about fashion businesses overnight, what would your ideal company look like or be?
That's a tough question.
Oh, yeah. That's a tough question.
I think that what I see is a lot of companies working on these issues and really trying to find a good path to figure out from where they are, where do they go. And you see that in corporate social responsibility departments, you see it in compliance efforts, you see it in them trying to come together as the industry and address some of the issues around cotton growing and organic cotton, but they don't really have a good way to communicate that directly to the consumer of, I have a broken industry, I'm trying something new, and give me a break. And it was really interesting, I was in Banana Republic yesterday, and they have these little tank tops that are 5% organic cotton, and it's a tough thing to secure organic cotton. There is a war out there right now, and everyone's trying to get in it and trying to basically secure the harvest of organic cotton. And so they had messaged that it was 5% organic cotton, but they said a little step at a time. And I'm wondering how the average consumer is going to see that, if they're skeptical because 95% of it isn't, or if they see it as 5% and that was clearly communicated to me in a non-greenwashing way. So it's really difficult for the audience to perceive how these companies are doing. I mean, there's so much investment and there's so much work being done on auditing factories and remediation programs, et cetera. And this is basically a cost center for most companies, but they're trying all these experimental techniques with human resources systems and management techniques and trying to improve the work on the ground. But there's really no way for them to communicate that to to you all to discern between the Gap versus some other company versus a smaller company. So I think that the big companies are really challenged. And if there's one thing I could change, it would be to have more transparency and better metrics so that people could communicate directly to the consumer whether or not the product was good, and to realize that it's not going to be 100% great. So what is that interim step that is credible and is worth buying?
Great. Sam and Maggie, this is directed at you. How do you buy clothes? It's a little freebie question here. Nice, fun question. How do you buy clothes? Not necessarily what do you buy, but, you know, how do you buy them and what do you think about when you buy them? I mean, we all know a lot about the clothing industry, so what do you think about when you buy them?
Go ahead. I have a unique approach. I mean, it depends on... You mean, so I often have to go to an event, and so my approach will first be to go to a vintage store, to a used clothing store, and I will look for something that already exists. Now, you're limited in, will it fit? I'm not extremely tall. And so is it going to be something that's going to fit me? Is it the right look? So, you know, first I'll go through that process. And then if I don't find something there, then I will go to a store like EcoCitizen, where I will look for something that is, you know, I'll look for something that's either organic cotton or some alternative, maybe a recycled, something that comes from recycled PET bottles that diverts big plastic bottles from landfill. The one thing I will never look for is a product that is made from what we call a monstrous hybrid. And I think this is very important for people to understand, and I know that most clothing companies don't understand this. And so William McDonough and Michael Braungart, who are the creators of Cradle to Cradle philosophy, talk a lot about monstrous hybrids, and that people don't understand that when you blend an organic material, like organic cotton, and then you blend that with something that's synthetic, that's man-made, you're basically ruining the cradle-to-cradle stream. So products shall either go back into the ecosystem, they can go back into the biosphere and become, you know, they just biodegrade, or they can have a plan for their reuse. So many plastic things or polyester things, there's a plan for what's going to happen in their next iteration. When you blend them, you've destroyed the process for both. So basically, you can't do anything. They can't be recycled, nor can they biodegrade. So that's one thing that I'm really, really aware of.
So you specifically, that's on your mind as you're looking. You're specifically looking at that care content label.
Absolutely.
And I think it's shifting what you would buy.
Right. So I won't buy something that says, you know, 60% polyester and 40% organic cotton, which a lot of the eco-clothing companies are doing. So I'm very cognizant of that when I'm shopping. And, it's important for people to know what they're buying.
Mm-hmm. I think the number one thing I look for when I buy clothes is definitely fit. it's really hard to find clothes since I'm 4'9". So I generally shop in the kids section. definitely very rarely buy clothing.
Usually make your own.
Yeah. Uh-huh. I would say the majority of the clothing that myself and my fellow designers at ODA, majority of our clothes we make ourselves.
Uh-huh. And there's a strong craft movement, so perhaps more and more people are starting to do that.
Yeah, and I think one of the reasons why I started making clothes is because it was so difficult for me to find clothes that actually fit.
Great. So. One last question for Jocelyn at the end, and anyone else who wants to chirp in. Enoughism. How much fashion is enough?
Can you repeat the first part? I didn't hear.
Enoughism. It's a little enoughism. Ism. How much fashion is enough, would you say? Whether it's eco-fashion or not, how much is enough?
Well, I think that depends on the individual. I mean, everybody has their different buying habits and securities of what they need, you know. I mean, I think for me it's, you know, I'm minimalist and I don't really, you know, I have a store that has eco-fashion, but you know, I think the whole, it comes down to consumption, you know, and what are the consumer patterns of, say, this country, and how have people been trained to consume, and how do you start to make them think about that differently? So, you know, it really depends on the individual, and for me, it starts with education and sort of saying, okay, well, maybe, you know, yeah, that's a $55 t-shirt or $78 t-shirt, but you know, normally you're used to buying three of them. Maybe you just buy one now. It's organic cotton, and it has a story. And you know, and once people hear that story, I think they feel really good about it. And I think that's contagious. So I think it. I think enoughism. It really starts with, you know, you could say it started with the organic food movement, and then trickles down to fashion. But I think it, you know, it just really starts with. Individual like realization and, you know, wanting to learn about eco fashion and how they can help others in the world.
And I'm conscious, you know, when we say how much fashion is enough, that it sounds like we're closing in, that it's limiting choice. I wonder if any of the other panelists could speak to how different approaches to sustainable fashion that could open up choices. Perhaps Sam, for example, a little bit more about Cradle to Cradle as one of the options or services or, you know.
Well, I was actually going to mention before that, when you talk about enoughism, I was born on a commune. And so we didn't have a lot of clothing, nor did we have a lot of things that people take for granted in a normal society. Not that we weren't normal entirely.
Traditional.
But traditional, thank you. So, I mean, I think it didn't work. People don't give up everything. It's never actually been effective. And when you really feel like you're sacrificing everything that you love, and I wouldn't say everything that you love, but people love to wear beautiful clothing and they always have, you know, if you look at Native American rituals, people are dressing up and putting makeup on. I think it's an important part of our society. I think that we overconsume, especially in America. There's this need to constantly be keeping up with whatever the current movement is and whatever's trendy. And so to resist that urge and then to get into Cradle to Cradle, the idea of Cradle to Cradle is that you are, you know, creating something for either system, that all things that come from the earth should go back to the earth, either as a biological or technical nutrient. And to that end, you want to make sure that you are, when you're creating something, you know where it's coming from and where it's going to go. And that holds true to everything. I mean, I think it's very clear that we should be doing that in our own lives, whether we're purchasing it or we're producing it.
So talking about loops in a way, where do they go? It's loops, and how many different loops are there, whether it's vintage or thrift or recycling, and if we think in that way, that you can still consume, you can still enjoy fashion, but it's done in a way that's benign.
Hopefully. It's conscious.
But we're figuring it out. Yeah. And I like the way that you actually touched on the meaning of fashion, and actually the meaning of things for all of us. I'm sure we've all got garments that we've kept for years, one or two of them, and they've got special qualities. I wonder if maybe a couple more panelists could perhaps share an item that you've kept for a long time, and why you might have kept it for a long time. Because Sam just touched on the sort of the emotional durability of products, you know. And I think it's a really important one that is overlooked a lot with fashion, and bringing back the heartfelt, as well as all the intellectual and the technical aspects of sustainability. What about that emotional content? A couple of examples.
Yeah. So my mother lived on Okinawa when she was a little girl, and she had a beautiful red silk kimono, and that got passed down to me, and I have a picture of myself dressed up for Halloween in my red silk kimono, and we have a picture of my daughter 20 years later dressed up for Halloween in the red silk kimono, mm-hmm. and that item is incredibly meaningful to me in a way far beyond fashion. But, you know, just thinking about my daughter really, I think she's a wonderful example of how fashion really doesn't have to be that meaningless. And she's 14. This is how she expresses who she is to the world. She looks very unique. She has a very definite style. And, you know, it's absolutely a part of who she is in the process of her, you know, declaring herself and finding herself. And I would not want to take that away from anybody. You know, she also happens to, you know, not want to spend a lot of money on clothes. She does a lot of DIY. She shops at thrift stores. So she makes her statement on a very small budget. But I wouldn't want to, you know, necessarily impose that on the entire world. That's...
So the different approaches to sustainability and letting people express themselves still while being aware of it. Different, yeah. Mm-hmm. Thank you. To our panel. We are going to be taking your questions soon, and as a reminder, before we do that, I would like to say that this is the Commonwealth Club's InForum programme, and tonight we are hosting Eco Fashion from Birkenstock to Couture. I'm Linda Gross of California College of the Arts, and I am here with Maggie Kim, co-founder and designer of Oda, Zem Joaquin, director of the Global Green Board and founder and editor-in-chief of EcoFabulous, Jocelyn Van Arsdale, owner of EcoCitizen, Tierra Delfort, founder and designer of Delfort Denim, Karen Holtzman, director of category management at Transfer USA. Now let's go to the audience for questions.
I have a two-part question. Does anyone know how much of the world's resources actually go toward the manufacture of fashion or clothing? And the second question is, how can eco go mass? Or is that a total contradiction?
So I don't have the actual number to the first question you asked. I do know that cotton production accounts for about 25% of world pesticide use, and only 2-3% of the land it's grown on. So if you want a statistic, that's the one I've got for you. And I'll look into the other one. And in terms of mainstream going eco, I do think it's a very complex issue. I don't think it's realistic to expect a Gap to produce everything they make out of organic cotton or recycled polyester in our lifetime. But I think asking every company to be conscious of their environmental impact and to make transparent steps towards improving that, I don't think that's unrealistic. And some people can address it in their product, and some people maybe have to address it in their internal systems and the way that their company uses energy across the board. But I don't think it's unrealistic to expect that from every company out there.
I have two quick answers to that. I don't have an exact answer, but one thing is that Americans throw away an average of 68 pounds of clothing textiles per year, 68 pounds, and that in an average year, there are $196 billion are spent on apparel in the U.S. So that's not exactly your answer, but one quick thing is that textile recycling removes 2.5 billion pounds of consumer clothing waste headed for landfills each year. And that's just people shopping at Goodwill and used clothing stores.
I think it can go mass as long as there is a consumer willingness to pay more, just like you would pay between 10 to 25% more for your fair trade certified cup of coffee. You need to pay, because you're dealing with both cotton and fiber issues and sweatshop issues, 25 to 35% more for your clothing. But I think that there is an opportunity for differentiated mass clothing, and that's actually what we're trying to do with a fair trade certification, both at the cotton level and at the factory level.
Can I just ask a little quick question related to that? Do you think that 5% organic on that garment is an effort to take sustainability or sustainable fashion mass? And does it, you know, what is the balance between cost and scale? And, you know, for those large retailers, what does it mean back at the farm end?
Well, I think if the profits from that shirt actually go back into programs for organic farmers, I mean, that's the biggest thing missing right now is the investment to train farmers and to help them through the transition period, the lower yields, to be able to afford the certification, et cetera. So I think it depends on really, was that just a ploy to get the consumer to buy it, or is that a part of a larger strategy to reinvest, to develop for the future?
Not too good at speaking in these things. So my question is, we all talked about sustainable fashion. We're all here for a reason. But I'm confused about, is fashion truly sustainable? We talk about organic cotton and organic textiles, but doesn't it go one step further, like in the manufacturing process? So we talked about closed loops, and I agree with all of that, but doesn't it go back to even, there's still children and other people like picking the cotton. Are they getting paid a fair wage? So how do we all help that process as well? Like, we're all here, but how does it go? How do we take it one step further?
Well, the
and I have another question
is,
too.
The easy answer is wait until we actually come up with a fair trade certified garment, because that includes sustainable prices for farmers, and there are sustainable prices set. And in the UK and in other markets, you can buy products made with fair trade certified cotton that actually guarantee that price back to the producer. The problem is we need to address the factory issue as well.
Yeah. I would just say that one thing you could do is know where you're, again, who you're buying from and where they're getting their materials. I know Tierra, and I know that she spends a lot of time with the farmers, and she knows where her cotton comes from. There are lots of other people, like John Patrick Organics. He trains people in Peru to grow cotton sustainably, and he works with the farmers. So again, if you know who's making your clothing, and you know that they, you know, you should find out what their story is. So you have to do a little bit more investigation as a consumer, but it's the same thing as organic food or anything else. You need to also connect with what you wear.
And I'd like to add one thing. Like I said before, like China Labor Watch is, you know, you can say, okay, where does Armani Exchange make their clothing? And who? A lot of these people share factories. So there's these reports where you can say, okay, they share it with Banana Republic, and they share it with this other company, Anne Klein. And there's, you know, the information is out there on the web. You just have to look for it, I think.
Hi. There's a lot of talk about eco-fashion from a fiber standpoint. I'm curious about dyeing and finishing. And is that minor compared to the fiber origin? Can you speak a little bit to that, please?
Yeah, there's a lot of toxic resins and finishes that are used, especially in denim. And there's a lot of toxicity, and one of the biggest problems is that they're not even using health and safety equipment to apply these types of finishes. So there's a lot of work that's kind of generation two for a lot of big companies, is to move beyond social compliance and start looking at effluent guidelines for dyeing and finishing.
There's the global organic textile standards that do include processing as well as the fiber.
There's also a really interesting fiber, just so you know. I don't know if you know about Tencel. And Tencel and Modal, they use fibers that are spun, and they spin completely white. So they don't need to be bleached. They're not using FSC certified pulps yet, which is my issue. But it is. There are some interesting technologies that are evolving and that are going to be coming to the forefront. And then they can use special dyes that then they capture as well. So to look for things like that.
Hi, my name is Poonam Kapoor, and I'm one of the founders of Conscious Fashionistas, and it's a thrift couture shopping business, a clothing line. And my question for you guys is, can thrift couture be a sustainable compromise?
I think Zem touched nicely on the limitations of thrifting. I think it's an important part of the picture. I think there's, you know, we also happen to live in a place where there's a lot of great thrift shops. It's not so in the rest of the country. And I think we can't really, the apparel market is a huge economic machine. And I don't think we want to shut that down. I think we want to make it into something that is positively affecting the people that are working in, you know, on creating that part of the economy. So I think it's a part of the picture, but I don't think it's the full picture, talking about thrift.
Hi, how are you? My name's Kurt Alexander. I run a fashion label called Chaikin. And I work both in New York and here in California. In the fashion business, one of the things that we find globally is people look to New York to legitimize, create, and meme trends. California has always taken the lead in creating, memeing, and making trends important. We've done this a lot with ecological issues. My question for the panel is, are you seeing ways that we are not just, we're not just looking at how we make things appeal to certain segments of the market, but we make this idea of being ecologically right broad-based across people who are not yet evangelists or converts.
So does San Francisco have something in particular to offer the fashion industry that is that's unique to this place? Sorry, I interrupted.
Yeah, I do think that. I think, from living in both places, the sort of where the birth of the social movements in the 60s and, you know, the organic movement, Berkeley, you know, I think the origins of the sort of eco-conscious thought process, it can be... filtered back to New York. I think there's an organization called Earth Pledge that is based out of New York, and they provide organic fabrics and eco alternatives to designers. And it's a very valuable resource. So I would say, I think that they have to work together. I mean, I definitely believe I see as California more as the center of the we've got great thrift stores, great secondhand. I mean, it's unlike any other place. I mean, maybe middle America, but working back and forth with New York, and I think, there's lots of designers based out of New York who are doing great work with eco-friendly fabrics like organic, L'Oreal, Bahar Shapar, so...
I will say that the West Coast and San Francisco in particular has been highlighted in trend magazines recently because of environmental aspects and bicycling, bicycle messengers and so on and so forth, and commuting. And I do think that if you think of the innovative businesses that come from the Bay Area and you think of the creativity that we have in the Bay Area and you think of the environmental awareness and the access that we have to leading environmentalists, it's an incredible combination that's just the incubator. Right. Potential here just makes me, yes. I can't bear it, the excitement.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I think one key role that this area can play is if you look at the big companies here, Nike, Levi's, not Nike, although I guess they're West Coast too, so we'll include them, Gap, North Face, they've all made very public, very aggressive sustainability, very public sustainability goals. And if they can show that this is something that is not just a cost center, but actually makes their business more efficient and their customers more loyal, I think big companies all over the country and all over the world will follow that lead.
I mean, I think we should also mention that like, we have Yotunde here, and she has this innovative fashion council, and looking at, you know, they like to make 6th Street, and that whole area in the Bay Area, really an area to develop alternative fabrics and alternative design that really celebrates sustainability in a very real way here. And I think that's exciting for people from the Bay Area that, you know, we've often been laughed at as less fashionable than our brethren in Los Angeles and in New York. And I think, you know, some of the things that changed that was Bloomingdale's moving in, and then we saw Barney's. Mm-hmm. And now we're seeing that those are New York companies coming here and saying, look, we're going to bring you our fashion sense. But I think we're creating our own style as well. And I think that's also really exciting is that I think we're now, there's more of an exchange than them just giving us their sense of style.
Yeah, I'd like to just touch on a lot of things you've said. First of all, I'm really happy to see a panel of all women. I just want to note that. But one of the things that I'm also one of the founding members of Conscious Fashionistas, and how it all evolved is really organically because we each were dressing in only thrift. We made a pact to buy not. So we followed the group in San Francisco that did the compact to not buy anything new. And we started just wearing thrift, and people noted and said, where did you get that? How do you make this happen? And so we started these events where we've turned shopping into a communal experience. And I think that's one of the things that's happened in the fashion industry is it's really isolating, and we're bombarded with all these messages of you need to wear this, you need to look like this. And so I think one of the most important things is to create community around shopping in fashion, and also to just remind people that there's...
I just want to draw you to a question.
Yeah,
the
okay.
Panel,
well, I think basically is kind of saying what Tara was saying about thrift is how do you use thrift, use what's already in the world, and then create community around it?
Sense of community is actually a very important question. Yeah. Relationships again.
Yeah. I mean, I think there are people like you doing it. I think, you know, the internet has changed fashion in the way that it's changed every aspect of our lives. And, you know, there's all sorts of blogs that really celebrate people's individuality and in terms of fashion. So, and designers are now drawing inspiration from these, you know, the inspiration is traveling the other way now, where designers are looking on blogs of, you know, women who wear vintage and women who, you know, wear cheap clothes, you know, whatever it is, and seeing that inspiration from the street. So it's kind of like designers are now trying to capture individuality and this sort of sense of, you know, they want to create the same sense of community people are finding elsewhere with their clothes, and, you know, who knows what that'll lead to, but I think the fashion industry is noticing that that's happening and that it's something people are longing for.
What about your smaller stores in the Mission and also yours, Eco Citizen, Jocelyn? Do you have a sort of regular clientele and sort of you know, a sense of community that's coming from your stores also?
I do, and you know, it's the whole premise of starting my company was to provide a platform for collaboration, a platform for ideas, for education, and because I had worked in the fashion industry before, and I became very disenchanted with it, with the speed of it, and I needed to take a step back for a few years or more, I don't know, and I came, you know, I came back to it because I met a Brazilian lace maker at the Santa Fe Folk Art Market of, say, 2 or 3 years ago, and she was supporting 26 villages with the sale of her lace at this one market just over for 3 days. And she would make about $30,000 and then go back to Brazil and support 26 villages with the money that she'd make from this festival. And so I thought, wow, if one person can do that and really, you know, change the world like that, then this is something that I'm really interested in being a part of. And so from there, I sort of developed the idea of opening up a store. So it's about including everybody, you know, and it's about including the workers and respect, you know, making sure that, you know, that I don't, you know, not being responsible for the high levels of leukemia amongst farm workers, whether it be in our food or our clothing, or, you know, just to really make a conscious choice and to really show people, like, wow, this can be done differently, and eco-fashion can look like this, and this is my vision, and there's many other visions in San Francisco which I think are all doing a great job. So, you know, I think it's a really exciting time right now as far as the community, you know, and we all promote each other, and we all have a different aesthetic taste, and, you know, and, you know, I know a lot of people on this panel through that community, and it's really exciting to be, like, living right now to really, you know, working together with everybody who are putting their energy into this movement.
Maggie?
The store that Oda is part of is a cooperative store in the Mission called the Mission Statement. There's 10 designers there. We all share responsibilities in running the store, paying rent for the store. So really with that cooperative environment, we've created a community among the designers there, but that's also trickled down definitely to our customers, and there's definitely a sense of community among the customers there. So I think it's a cool way to, you know, be part of a retail outlet, but not make a huge commitment in buying a big retail space. So
it's a new approach to business right there.
Is there a fabric recycling center in the Bay Area? Like, I remember in design school, there was all that leftover muslin that just gets put in a box, and then the garbage people take it out and put it in the trash. So I just have a whole bunch of fabric left, and I don't know where to bring it. They're not clothes.
I could think of a few colleges in the Bay Area that might take that fabric. I think, isn't the largest recycler Goodwill?
Yes.
In the Bay Area?
Yes.
But it's not actual fabric, but in terms of, you know, garments.
It's central. We'll take anything.
So Goodwill does take textiles as well as finished garments.
I'll address that tomorrow on Eco Fabulous. I will do the research tonight, and I will find you a place.
Hi, I'm Jeff Denby of Packed Apparel. We're actually an underwear brand, eco-conscious underwear, high-premium underwear brand. And I actually had a weird experience today, and I was talking to a supplier who makes their garments in Baluchistan. And I didn't know where Baluchistan was. And I thought, wanting to be a transparent company, mm-hmm. how are we going to communicate that to our customers? And when I started digging deeper, they actually did a lot of really cool things there, built schools for the cotton workers, children and stuff. And so I'm just wondering, maybe Zem, because you run a very consumer-facing blog, what have you seen as effective ways of communicating this stuff to consumers? Because not everybody's going to dig into it.
Is getting websites like myself and other... I mean, that's the great thing about blogging is that it's, you know, the blogosphere is large and the information is disseminated quickly. And so by sharing that information and, you know, using PR... And that the PR person could be you making those phone calls. And then, you know, I write about it, then it's picked up on Inhabitat. And then Inhabitat writes about it, and it's picked up on, you know, another blog. And so, I mean, the information should be able to get out there really quickly. And there are people who are very interested in finding out this information. And, you know, that's something I would support. I'm excited to find out more about your underwear. But my husband's in the audience, so counter that with, I would like to read about your underwear. But I do think, you know, it is important for, you know, to put that information out there, and that does excite me, and that excites a lot of people now, and that's what people are looking to vote with their dollars. And so again, if you get that information out there, and anybody who's not already looking, that's the message we're trying to put out there, is please get informed. I don't promote consumerism. I promote consciousness. So, you know, I don't want people to just go out to buy more because it exists, because we're writing about it. I want, if you're going to buy something already, know what you're buying. Know that there is almost always a better alternative.
Hi. I happen to be a textile expert, and I've been hearing you talk a lot about cotton and organic cotton and so on, but it's clearly a bigger picture than just organic cotton. And I'd like to hear from the designers, I think, about what other fibers that they're using, and also to address the gentleman's point back there about this area becoming a center. I belong to an organization called People Wear SF, which is a new trade organization for the San Francisco Bay Area, and we're having our first in the nation trade show of sustainable fabrics on October 10th. And that's something that the city of San Francisco is supporting strongly. We want to ask everyone to attend.
So talking about, I have a denim company, so my world is cotton. The other fibers that I've used are, I have done some stuff with hemp, which is a fairly sustainable fiber. Other than that, you know, I'm not here to promote cotton. I guess I'm here to promote smarter consumption of cotton because so much of our apparel is made out of that. And I do know, if you want to talk about what other fibers I would use if I were to expand my line, I think Zem touched on one, which is the Lyocell brand, which is a closed loop viscose fiber. Is something that I would, you know, I think is actually, that company is doing something positive with a fabric that's really appealing to many, many designers because it's an alternative to bamboo. I think the issue is very complex around that, and organic cotton is something that it's such a better impact than conventional cotton. It's a really easy story to tell. And so I know that we've focused on that today. Maybe we'll have a more in-depth conversation about fiber in the future.
At Oda, we use a wide range of organic wool. We also use other natural fibers like silk, linen. We also use bamboo and soy, which are two really hyped-up sustainable fabrics right now. I think the way we approach using new sustainable fibers is sort of with a skeptical enthusiasm. It's just great that there's a lot of new sustainable fibers out there, but there's a lot of trade-offs that you have to consider. So I think the challenges for us as designers is weighing those trade-offs, deciding whether we're going to use those sustainable fabrics. But I think, you know, I hope that the future of sustainable fabrics would include certifications of these new fibers like bamboo and soy so that we can ensure that there are fair labor practices around the development of those plantations and also the processes around making those fibers, because there are a lot of trade-offs with both bamboo and soy in those areas.
And Zem also touched on the closed-loop recycling, which would address polyester, which is mm-hmm. closed-loop cycling, and then also the social issues, of course. I mean, fabric is one place to address sustainable fashion, and there are perhaps other areas besides fabric where you can have a greater influence if you're actually looking at the fashion system itself. Mm-hmm. So with that, let's give a big hand to the panelists for their thoughts here tonight. And now this meeting of Inforum and the Commonwealth Club is adjourned.